perilous. You barely got clear before she went up. "Damn rebels," she said. He smiled. "Indeed. They appear to be having a good day." Isfal's tone turned serious again.
"You trust Belcor to do this?"
Cham shook his head. "I don't trust him at all. But trust has nothing to do with it. He'll do it because he has to. He's too far in to turn back. He'll gripe, but he'll do whatever we need."
"All right," she said. "We're off to it then."
"We're refueling, and then I'll head back to the search area. Kallen will activate the hack as soon as you take down the station."
"Simple as the push of a button," Kallen said.
"How will he know when it's down? If you're underground, I can't reach him."
"How will you know when it's down?" Cham asked Kallen.
"I'll know."
"He'll know," Cham said to Isfal.
"Understood,"
Isfal said to Cham.
"See you at the search grid, then."
"Just limp in, Isfal. You're supposed to be damaged."
"Right."
"Good luck. I'll see you soon."
He sent her a set of coordinates within the search area where they thought Vader and the Emperor had gone down. They'd rendezvous there.
"Got it. Luck to you, too."
"Exit, Isfal. Always think one through. Then think through another."
"Always," she said, and managed not to make it sound ironic. The depth underground soon cut off communications. Cham had neglected to tell her that he'd already diverted some of the rebel ships retreating from the moon base and sent them to the map grid to start the search for Vader and the Emperor's shuttle. Conceivably, they could get lucky and find their prey before Cham and Isfal ever arrived.
"Hurry," he said to Kallen. "I want to get back out there."
Chapter 12.
Isval's comm buzzed on an open frequency, using her call sign. She and Phelan shared a look of surprise. They shouldn't be receiving any comm chatter. Still, she opened the channel.
"Go,"
she said.
"Isfal, this is Nordon. We found something in the search area. It looks like the ship Vader was supposed to be on."
"Nordon! Wait, what are you doing in the search area already? Did Cham authorize that? And what are you doing on this frequency?" Her tone was sharper than she intended, but only because she didn't want anyone else to find Vader. She wanted to find him for Pock, for Eshko. Find him and see herself reflected in the lenses of his helmet as she pulled the trigger and put a blaster shot through his chest.
"The comm is encrypted, Isfal. We're the first out here. And yes, Cham knows. He diverted us from the moon base withdrawal. Two more teams are en route."
"Three when we get there," she said.
"Right. Anyway, we found what looks like a downed ship in the forest at these coordinates."
Isfal's shipboard comp took in the coordinates. They were at the northern edge of the search area.
"Send it out to the other teams en route," Isfal said.
"Is it the Emperor's shuttle?" Phelan asked, eagerness in her tone.
"Have you confirmed the ID of the ship?"
Isfal asked Nordon, and held her breath in anticipation of the answer.
"The forest is too thick, but it looks like an Imperial shuttle. We could sit down and have a look."
Isfal was already shaking her head.
"Negative, negative. Do not get on the ground, Nordon. If it's Vader, just don't get on the ground. Understood?"
"Understood. What then?"
Isfal considered options.
"Have you informed Cham?"
"Can't raise him."
Still in the underground base, then. She knew what Cham would advise. Reconnoiter and wait for reinforcements.
"Eyeball it as best you can, Nordon. If you confirm it's the Emperor's shuttle, or if you get a visual on Vader or the Emperor, wipe them from the face of the planet."
"Copy that. What are you doing?"
"Blowing things up."
"As usual. See you soon, then."
"Here we go,"
Isfal said to Phelan. The generator hummed to life, and the dish on the portable communications array started to turn as it sought an uplink.
We'll have a connection in moments, Lord Vader,
the captain of the Royal Guard said. Use the Emperor's personal frequency. Arrange for immediate. Vader sensed it before he could see it. He looked sharply at his master, saw him staring up at the sky, at two rapidly approaching lights ascending from altitude. Ships, Vader knew. Perhaps they'd seen the fire.
Ships incoming, my lords,
said one of the royal guards. He held field magnifiers to his helmet's lenses.
Not Imperial. A pair of Twi'lek freighters, I think. Should I fire a flare, my lords?
I don't think that will be necessary,
the Emperor said with a hard smile. The ships closed the distance rapidly, their clunky, disc-shaped silhouettes coming into clear focus as they neared. Vader activated his lightsaber and stepped in front of his master. Isval turned her mind from Nordon's discovery and piloted the escort ship in at a slow pace, heading toward Ryloth's equator. Below them, the planet's surface was a rocky, uneven sea of browns, tans, and blacks. Dry riverbeds veined the terrain. Thin forests dotted the landscape here and there. In the distance, one of the equatorial mountain ranges rose majestically into the sky, backlit by the reds and oranges of the setting sun. Isval rarely allowed herself the time to appreciate beauty, but she spent a moment doing just that.
Something, eh? Phelan asked. I'm not even Twi'lek, and it takes my breath away sometimes. Everything looks beautiful from far away, Isval said. Harsh. Up close, though.
Right, Phelan said, and tore her eyes away from the mountains. She leaned forward and stared out the viewscreen.
I don't see the base yet.
We're 300 clicks out, Isval said, eyeing the scanner readout. No ships in the vicinity.
They're all on rescue or patrol, Phelan said. Let's get this done and get to hunting.
Phelan nodded.
Copy that.
When they closed to within the communication distance typical for Imperial protocol, Isval hailed the base.
Equatorial Base Alpha, this is Imperial Escort 29, do you copy?
The response came immediately.
Escort, you are loud and clear.
I have wounded VIPs from the Perilous who are in need of immediate medical help. Please have a med team on standby and provide me with a landing pad number.
Isval watched the scanner, waiting to see the station's shields drop. Phelan sat in the seat beside her, fidgeting.
Come on, Phelan muttered. Show us your belly and we'll give you a scratch.
The shields remained up, however, and the comm crackled.
This is Major Steen Borkus. We received word you were en route. I apologize for this, but please forward your credentials, Escort 29. And who are the VIPs? I served on the Perilous way back when. I'm friends with many of the crew.
Isval shared a glance with Phelan and bit down on the comm link that connected her to Cham.
They want credentials, Cham, and names of the wounded. Apparently the base commander used to serve on the Perilous.
Nothing. Cham was still too deep underground.
The captain's name was Lewitt, Phelan said. We could use his name.
How do you know that? Isval asked. Phelan shrugged.
Picked it up somewhere. What are you going to tell them?
Isval started composing lies in her mind. Phelan leaned forward and pointed out the viewscreen.
There it is.
Ahead they could see the large installation, with its many concrete buildings, the shield generator, and the series of large satellite dishes that formed the hub of the Imperial Communications Network on Ryloth. The setting sun painted them all in orange. Isval thought she saw a couple of small transports out on the landing pads, but no fighter craft.
Isval, Phelan asked.
Isval activated the comm.
I have bridge crew aboard.
Bridge crew,
came Borkus' reply.
I heard Lewitt got off safely. Who do you have?
The XO. Isval silently congratulated herself on not using Lewitt's name, and then started spinning the lies.
Sir, I honestly can't say. I'm just an escort pilot. The officers I have are in very bad shape, as is my boat. It was chaos up there, and we barely got clear. I don't even have the ability to upload my credentials. The comp is a mess.
Beside her, Phelan screamed as if she were wounded and in pain.
Sir, Isval said, and feigned desperation. We need help here.
Escort 29, you are clear to land on Pad 9,
Major Borkus said.
Med team is en route.
Isval disconnected.
We don't go hot until we get closer, she said to Phelan.
Isval could not help but smile as the scanner showed the shields go down. As they drew nearer the base, they could make out more details. A group of troops and a med team with its droids hurrying toward landing Pad 9. The observation and control deck lit from within, which allowed them to see the officers and troops standing near the large windows and watching their approach.
I see four dishes, Phelan said. We can get them all in one pass.
The dishes are the priority, and I've got those. Your job is to kill every Imperial you can. Phelan looked over at her, perhaps surprised at her bloodthirstiness, and nodded. They closed, the escort's propulsion eating kilometers. The base grew larger, and Isval started picking the order of her targets and gently maneuvering the escort into an attack run. They had to hit all the dishes on the first pass. She didn't think the escort boat had the firepower to take out a hardened shield generator, so they needed to get the dishes down before Borkus realized what was happening and re-energized the shields. The comm crackled.
That was landing Pad 9, Borkus said. 9, Escort 29.
Copy that, Isval said, but didn't change course. Instead, she accelerated all at once. She activated the targeting computer, knowing the Imperials would pick up on it, and locked on.
Fire at will, she said to Phelan.
She kept a mental count in her head, figuring they had 30 seconds at the most. Phelan had the side-mounted cannons on manual and started firing. Plasma slammed into the base, scattering the medical team and leaving a few corpses on the pad. Isval fired on her locked target, and one of the dishes went up in a cloud of flame and smoke. 3 seconds in. She didn't bother locking onto the second. She didn't have time. She switched the gun to manual and fired, connecting the space between the ship and the dish with lines of plasma. The second dish exploded, its base aflame, and the bulk of it toppled over into a nearby building, causing a secondary explosion that smothered the area in smoke. 5 seconds in. Isval was unable to see, but she kept her eyes on her instrumentation as she slowed and wheeled the boat hard to port. She was down to 20 seconds. The targeting computer locked on the third dish, and she fired. It disappeared into a column of flame and smoke and debris that rained against the escort's hull. She turned hard to get to the last, with Phelan firing blindly in the haze throughout. They came out of the smoke and saw the fourth dish ahead. A burst of fire slammed into the side of the boat, causing alarms to scream and rocking them to starboard. Defensive emplacements, Isval said, down to 10 seconds. Going evasive. Target the dish, Phelan. Green lines streaked in from the left and the right, bisecting the sky. Another slammed into the ship, but the escort boat's modest shields and hull held together.
I can't hit anything with the ship moving like this, Phelan said. Hold it steady!
Isval was going as slow as she could so as not to overshoot the target, but the lack of speed cost them. She wheeled left and right, up and down, but the escort boat wasn't a fighter and evaded fire poorly. Smoke started to fill the cabin. Alarms screamed, announcing failing systems.
Take the stick, Isval said. We'll get hit, Phelan said. I'm half the pilot you are.
Do your best, Isval said calmly. She had to take out the dish. You have the stick. I've got the guns. Now.
Phelan spat a stream of expletives and took the stick. To her credit, she kept the ship moving, jerking the boat around more or less at random. Nothing a seasoned pilot would do, but effective enough to keep them from getting vaporized. The comm rang on the movement's frequency. Nordon with an update, no doubt. Isval couldn't spare a moment to respond. Neither could Phelan, who white-knuckled the stick. Once they brought down the last dish, they wouldn't be able to respond until they were within line of sight. The smoke blocked the targeting computer, so Isval went to manual and put the last dish in her sights. Phelan swung the ship left and right. Fire from the base crossed directly in front of the bow. Fire, Isval! Phelan screamed. They drew closer. Isval held her calm, then depressed the fire button. Plasma slammed into the dish, splintering it into a rain of metal shards and an expanding ball of flame. Get us clear, Isval said, exhaling, and Phelan pulled up and accelerated to full.
They were out of range of blaster fire almost immediately. The sky filled the viewscreen as they climbed toward the outer atmosphere.
No pursuit, Isval said, checking the scanner.
Phelan cursed softly, shaking her head. Isval checked the comm, hoping Callan was ready with his hack. She tried her private comm just to make sure.
Cham, do you copy?
Nothing.
She tried to open the channel on Nordon's frequency. Nordon, do you hear me?
Again, nothing, just dead air and bursts of static. Phelan said,
looks like it worked. They're jammed. Limited comm planet wide. Callan is good.
He is, but let's not get comfortable, Isval said. Hardest parts yet to come.
She fed into the nav comp the coordinates of the location where they were supposed to meet Cham. They'd meet him there, then together head to the coordinates she'd received from Nordon.
The hunt for Vader would soon be on. The freighters completed a slow flyover, then turned and headed back toward the campsite. As they did, they accelerated and descended at a flat angle.
I think perhaps they've seen what they wanted to see,
the Emperor observed.
Noses down, the freighters began firing from blaster cannons mounted on the top and bottom of the ships, long red lines that exited the ship in superheated pulses. Trees 100 meters from Vader and the Emperor exploded into splinters under the onslaught, and the lines cut a rapid path along the clearing toward them, putting a patchwork of smoking holes in the earth, closing in on Vader.
One with the Force, Vader held his ground and tensed for impact. Then, he exploded into motion, his lightsaber humming as he spun it rapidly left and right, deflecting the powerful blaster shots off into the forest, shattering still more trees, destroying the tents, but sparing the communications array. The kinetic energy from the shots drove him backward, his boots putting furrows in the soft soil. The Royal Guards, momentarily taken by surprise, recovered enough to plant blaster rifles against their shoulders. They fired at the freighters as the large ship sped over and past them. But the personal weapons did no harm to the shielded and armored ships.
We should take cover in the trees, my lords, said the captain.
I think not,
the Emperor said softly, watching the ships wheel about.
They will come in lower this time, Vader said.
I believe you're correct,
the Emperor said. He removed his robe, took the elaborately crafted hilt of his lightsaber in hand, and ignited the blade. Vader looked on in surprise. He seldom saw his master so publicly demonstrate his power, and he understood what it meant, of course. there must be no survivors who could bear witness. Only the royal guards could be allowed to live. Only they could be trusted never to reveal what they'd seen, or even to talk about it among themselves. The freighters completed their turn and accelerated back toward the clearing, their engines screaming in the otherwise quiet air. The royal guard shifted position to stand before the Emperor, partially shielding him with their bodies, and fired as rapidly as they could at the oncoming ships. They hit the ships again and again, but the tiny bolts did no damage. Vader sank more deeply into the Force. Beside him, he felt his master's power gather. He reveled in the moment, in the combined pool of their collective, unadulterated might. The freighters opened fire, writhing thick lines of plasma onto the air. The shots churned the ground, destroyed trees, heated the air of the clearing. One slammed into the chest of a royal guard and vaporized all of him save for his helmet. Lost in the Force, Vader anticipated the shots that would have hit him, saw the appropriate angles of impact and deflection, and used the rapid spinning of his lightsaber to turn first one, then a second, and then a third shot, not into the tree line, but back at the ships. The heat and energy of the blaster shots driving him backward, warming the hilt of his weapon, a heat he could feel even through his glove. His master did the same with his lightsaber, the graceful arcs of its red line weaving a protective shield around him and turning the second ship's shots back at it. Both ships tried to turn out of the way of the redirected shots, one turning hard left, the other hard right. But they only exposed their underbellies and engines to the deflected bolts. Engines exploded into flame and spit smoke. His master raised his hands, forming one into a claw emitting jagged bolts of Force lightning that connected him for a moment to the ship. Vader imagined the interior of the craft lit up with the bolts of his master's power, the pilots screaming and writhing in pain as the dark side seared their flesh. The Emperor clenched his other hand, taking a mental hold on the ship with the Force. Vader, too, lifted a hand and reached out with the Force toward the other ship. Vader enmeshed himself in the Force, in his seething, ever-present wrath, and used it to take hold of the freighter and drive the entire ship toward the ground. He grunted with the effort, his respirator increasing his rate of breathing to account for the exertion. The ship, its damaged engines unable to compensate enough against the downward push of Vader's power, went nose down and streaked into the ground. Vader imagined the screams of the pilots as they watched the forest race toward them. The ship disappeared behind the tree line and exploded into a fireball that reached above the forest's canopy and caused the ground to vibrate. A cloud of black smoke rose into the darkening sky. A second boom sounded behind him, his master having driven the second ship into the ground the same way. The forest went silent for a moment in the wake of the explosions, with only Vader's breathing to disrupt the quiet, before the howls and chirps and squeals of Ryloth's fauna returned. Vader, his master, and the two royal guards stood untouched amid the smoking craters of blaster fire that pockmarked the terrain. The royal guards gazed at Vader, at his master, and Vader imagined the looks of wonder they must have under their helmets. They knew the Emperor had power, though Vader doubted they'd ever seen it so nakedly displayed.
"You,"
Vader said to the nearest.
"Sergeant Deez, my lord,"
said the guard and bowed his head.
"Check the wreckage of the ship, Sergeant Deez. If there are any survivors, bring them to me."
"Yes, Lord Vader,"
Deez said. He slung his blaster rifle and sprinted off into the forest. To the captain, Vader said,
"Get on the communications ray. Contact our forces."
His master put a hand on Vader's armored shoulder, the power in his touch a palpable weight.
"It seems the traitors found us,"
the Emperor said.
It appears you were right, Lord Vader. We're being hunted.
I offer again that I think we should move from this place.
I agree, my friend.
The captain of the Royal Guards, attempting to activate the communications array, called.
My lords, I can't get a signal. It doesn't make sense. The planet-wide network would have to be down for there to be dead air like this.
Vader strode over to the array, listened to the intermittent bursts of static, and understood the implications right away.
It's jammed.
He turned to his master.
More of them will be coming.
His master chuckled.
It appears then that the hunt is just beginning.
Before long, Sergeant Dees returned and reported no survivors. Vader had expected as much. But he also expected he'd get another chance, and soon, to take one of the rebels alive. The dull, repetitive beep of an alarm drove nails into Morse's temples. She opened her eyes and blinked in the antiseptic lighting of the shuttle's passenger cabin. Smoke and the acrid, ionized stink of short circuits filled the air of the cabin. She lay on her back on the metal deck, staring up at a recessed light that blurred in and out of focus. Her muddled thoughts started to coalesce, to arrange themselves in an order that made sense of her surroundings. Her ship had been shot down. And it had lost life support, and the cabin had been filling with smoke and... What was that damn alarm? How was she not dead? And where was Brield? Brield! She said, and saying the word aloud made her head pound. She recognized it as the after effect of partial hypoxia. Recognized, too, that her ability to understand what had happened meant that she was coming back from it. She took stock of her body, thought nothing was broken, so she used her arm to lift herself from the deck. Her aged, overweight frame ached, but she managed to sit upright. She blinked away a wave of dizziness. Twilight leaked in through one of the viewports. She stood, wincing at the pain the effort caused her, moved to the viewport, and looked out on the beige, rocky terrain of Ryloth. Tors, large and small, rose from the cracked ground, and the ubiquitous wind whipped clouds of dry soil into the air. Where on the planet was she? She didn't know the terrain well enough to even guess. She activated her comlink. Brailed! No response. Who had shot them down? Brield had said it was an Imperial escort. But why had it targeted Morse's shuttle? She started to change her comm frequency to hail Belcor, but hesitated. Belcor had sent her around the planet to help with rescuing someone. Not someone. VIPs. Darth Vader and the Emperor. She cursed, a wave of anxiety chasing away some of the bleariness. What had happened to them? Had they survived the Perilous's destruction? She had no idea what was going on. The autopilot must have engaged somehow as the shuttle descended, but she didn't even know how long she'd been unconscious. Once more she reached to activate her comlink to hail Belcor, a habit. She always called Belcor when she had an issue, any issue. But again, she hesitated. What was making the damn beeping sound? She looked around, finally traced the sound to a computer terminal stuck on reset. She powered it down, and the beeping mercifully stopped. She stood there a moment, staring at her reflection in the darkened screen of the computer. She was bleeding from a head wound in her forehead, and her left eye was swollen. She feared she'd dislocated a shoulder, but after testing it realized that she must have just slammed into something during the descent. She'd probably hit something when she'd fallen. She tried again to piece together events. As soon as her ship had reached the Perilous's debris field, she'd been attacked. Of all the ships up there, hers had been targeted. And by an Imperial escort, no less. Obviously, the escort ship had been hijacked by traitors, but could Belcour have been involved? She thought it unlikely, but then, was it really? The Free Ryloth movement had for years managed to stay ahead of Belcour. Or had it? The moment Darth Vader and the Emperor appeared in Ryloth's system, a visit that was not public knowledge, they were attacked by forces associated with the movement. Forces that would have had to have been staged into position, given the sophistication and scale of the attack. And then Morse herself was diverted to rescue operations to prevent her from taking command from Belcour planetside, and was immediately attacked. She thought back on recent months, even years, recalling the successes of the Free Ryloth movement. Belcour had always had an explanation, something plausible. But now, Morse was thinking of the kind of elaborate operation it must have taken to bring down an Imperial Star Destroyer. And the conviction started to come together in her mind. There was only one plausible explanation. The movement had to have had Imperial help. Highly placed Imperial help. Belcour. Everything circled back to Belcour. Morse cursed and staggered through the passenger compartment toward the cockpit. She opened the door to find Breald slumped in his seat, his head hanging at an odd angle, his tongue lolling, his neck obviously broken. He probably died after the ship had first taken fire. The man had served her for years. "Sorry, Breald," Morse said. She accessed the main computer and checked the ship's logs and status. The autopilot had indeed engaged at some point when the ship's tower had come back on. Breald had been conscious or dead by then, of course. The ship had set down near Ryloth's equator. The shuttle had taken some damage from the firefight, but was mostly intact and certainly flyable. It had been a while since Morse had flown anything herself, but she figured she could manage a shuttle. She unstrapped Breald, took him under the armpits, and dragged him into the passenger compartment. Even that small effort left her gasping and covered in a sheen of sweat. She'd let herself go, she realized. She'd let everything go. And it had cost her. Cursing her indolence, she laid Breald on the deck with as much dignity as possible and returned to the cockpit. She sat in the pilot's seat, fired up the engines, and realized all of a sudden that she didn't know where to go. She certainly couldn't return to the communication center, at least not immediately, not given her suspicions about Belcour. She checked the nav comp for nearby Imperial bases. She should have known which ones were nearby without needing the comp, but she'd been so disengaged from her duties in recent years that she had only a passing familiarity with planetary Imperial resources. The Equatorial Communications Hub was closest, and Steen Borkus commanded there. "Good," Morse muttered. She knew she could trust Steen. They'd served together as lieutenants. The man bled Imperial Grey. If Belcour was plotting, Steen would not be part of it. She activated the ship's communicator and hailed the hub. No response, just bursts of static and dead air. Thinking something must have caused the comm system to malfunction, Morse ran a system check. It showed nothing wrong. She frowned. She could think of only a couple of reasons why an operational communication system offered only dead air. And neither of them was good. Anxiety put a pit in her stomach. For a fleeting, hopefully foolish moment, she wondered if Belcour had arranged a coup and taken over the whole planet after killing Vader and the Emperor. But that was absurd. Wasn't it? She told herself it was. But she needed to find out what exactly was going on. She engaged the engines and watched the planet's surface fall away beneath her. She felt a strange sense of being disembodied as the ship gained altitude and realized it was because she hadn't experienced flight from the cockpit in years. She soon had her bearings, however. The navcomp handled the headings, and she managed to fly with reasonable competence. About 50 kilometers away from the communications hub, she saw the rising smoke, dark columns of black clouds that climbed from the terrain to diffuse into the darkening sky. She feared the entire base had been destroyed. But as she flew closer, she saw that the communications dishes had taken most of the damage. The dead air on the comm suddenly made sense. What in the... All at once, her computer blared an alarm, indicating that the hub's guns had a target lock on her ship. Her comm line crackled to life, and a voice came over it, the audio dulled and hollow due to the line-of-sight communication.
Identify yourself, shuttle, and do not approach any closer.
Morse fumbled with the controls, trying to power down the engines while activating the comm.
This is Moff Delian Morse.
A pause. Then a familiar voice spoke.
I'll need a visual or I'll shoot you out of the sky,
Steen Borkus said.
Say again,
Morse said.
A visual, ma'am. Now, or I'll be forced to fire.
What?
Now, please,
Borkus said tightly. Morse eyed the communications panel, looking for the button that would open a visual connection. Her unfamiliarity with the controls cost her time, the target lock alarm screeching at her all the while.
Hold on, she said. Hold on. There. Got it.
A visual came up on her view screen, and Steen Borkus's thin, acne-scarred face filled most of it. Frantic activity went on behind Steen, junior officers and technicians moving rapidly among the comp stations. Borkus's eyes, set a bit too close together, widened when he saw Morse.
Forgive me, Moff.
He saluted briskly, his thin face reddening.
We had reason to be skeptical. Where's your pilot, ma'am?
It's just me, Morse said. Brief me when I land. Give me a landing pad.
Yes, ma'am.
Morse set the shuttle down, unstrapped, and hurried to the gangplank. Borkus, two lieutenants, and a squad of stormtroopers awaited her outside. Borkus remained the rod-thin, bald, clean-shaven man he'd always been. As Morse debarked, the entourage saluted, and Morse returned it as crisply as her wounded shoulder allowed.
I need a medic for the Muff!
Borkus ordered a lieutenant.
Later,
Morse said. First we need to talk. The landing pads were elevated 10 meters relative to the rest of the base, so she could see the devastation clearly. Fires burned in several places. The air smelled of smoke and burning plastic. Small maintenance ships and fire suppression droids flew around the base, while teams of technicians and maintenance droids rolled or sprinted from here to there. Shouted orders carried through the still air. The remains of the communications dishes, ordinarily among the largest structures on the base, lay toppled, their bases smoking mountains of jagged metal crowned with the ruins of the huge concentric bowls.
We are working on getting the network back up, Borkus said. Dish 3 is the least damaged. We're all hands to get it partially operational.
Good,
Morse said, unable to stop staring at the destruction. 20 technicians and 12 maintenance droids worked on what must have been Dish 3. Several maintenance ships hovered above, dropping cables that workmen were preparing to attach to the outer support ring of the dish.
How long?
12 hours, ma'am, give or take. We got word of an incoming escort ship carrying Imperial VIPs.
Morse tensed, turned to face her old friend.
Word from whom?
Borkus's brow furrowed. The communications center. Or so we thought. Couldn't have been, though. The rebels must have hacked the communication system. Credentials seemed good, but obviously they were not. As soon as we dropped our shields, that boat opened up. Took less than a minute to do all this. Less than a minute? Moores echoed stupidly, thinking of Belcour, of treachery. Borkus drew himself up.
I'm sorry, ma'am. Once this is over, I will obviously offer my resignation.
Moore shook her head. Absolutely not.
Ma'am,
I won't hear of it, Steen. Moore said, this isn't your fault. Moore's knew quite well whose fault it was, though she didn't say it. Hers. Belcour's. She continued. I'm going to need every trusted worker I can find to get the situation back under control. Borkus inclined his head in gratitude.
What is the situation, ma'am? We're in an informational vacuum here.
Is there somewhere private we can talk? Moores asked.
Of course. Follow me.
Before that, there's a body aboard my shuttle, Moores said. A good man. See to him. Steen ordered a couple of lieutenants to see to Breeld. Then the two of them headed off. As they walked, Moore said,
It's good to see you, Steen.
You as well, ma'am, said Borkus.
Wish the circumstances were better. Years earlier, Moores had decided to delegate authority over Imperial operations to Belcour rather than Steen. Belcour had seemed more manageable, less a challenge to Moore's authority. She had regretted that decision a few times since, but never more than today. They took a transport to the main building, a three-story glass-walled hexagonal building situated in the center of the base. Moores rehearsed what she would say as they flew. Once they sat down, Borkus led her through lifts and halls that buzzed with activity and finally into a private conference room. Moores lost track of the number of salutes she received. Steen ran a tight ship.
Bring the Morph and myself some calf and something to eat, Borkus called out to someone in the hall.
Pain reliever, too,
Moores said, wincing at the aches in her shoulder, her head.
She sank into one of the cushioned chairs that surrounded the large conference table, suddenly exhausted. She exhaled and tapped her fingers on the table.
So, Borkus said, turning and taking a seat as well. We have an Imperial traitor.
Moores looked up sharply, eyebrows raised, feeling her face warm.
What? How did...
A knock on the door announced the arrival of the meds, the calf, and the food. Borkus poured them each a calf, but Moores couldn't begin to imagine putting something in her unstable stomach other than the meds, which she swallowed right away. The moment the junior officer left, Borkus continued.
How do I know that? It's not that hard to put together, ma'am. The Perilous is ambushed. The communications hub is attacked by an Imperial ship after a questionable order from the communications center. It was from the communications center, wasn't it, ma'am? Not a hack.
It wasn't a hack, Moores said. All of that took a lot of coordination, Borkus said. A lot of looking the other way by Imperial authorities, if not outright collaboration. Is it a coup? Moore shook her head and stared into her cup.
I can't say for sure, she said.
She could not make eye contact with Borkus.
I've been absent, Steen.
Yes, Borkus said.
Things changed after you lost Moora.
When was that? 4 years ago now?
Moores nodded. She hadn't heard anyone else say her wife's name in a long time. She died in a transport accident on Coruscant. A fluke. A system malfunction had flown her and 10 other civilians into the side of a building. For months afterward, Moores had imagined what Moora must have felt as the transport accelerated. Terror? Resignation? The loss had eroded her, then broken her.
Things didn't change, she said. I did.
After Murrah had died, she'd found herself purposeless and content in her purposelessness, just drifting. She'd turned hedonistic, grown lazy. Worse, she'd lost her ability or desire to discern a quality commander from a flatterer. So she'd promoted Belcor and those like him, while ignoring people like Steen Borkus. And now she'd lost a Star Destroyer, the Emperor, Lord Vader, and maybe a planet.
I overlooked you, Steen. I'm sorry.
Steen's thin lips formed a still thinner smile.
I don't feel unfairly treated, ma'am.
Morse knew it was a lie, but she took the words and the spirit they were offered.
Can I rely on you now, Steen? Despite everything?
As ever, ma'am.
Mors nodded and laid things out.
Belcor Drey is the traitor. I'm almost certain.
Borkus tensed as he sipped his calf. The contempt in his eyes was more eloquent and cutting than any insult he might have hurled at Belcor.
And,
Mors went on, but she hesitated a moment before her dry mouth could utter the words.
Darth Vader and the Emperor were aboard the Perilous.
Borkus stared at her, looking dumbfounded. His hand started to tremble, sending chaff over the cup's rim. He set it down on the table.
Were they... aboard? When it exploded?
Moore shook her head.
I don't know.
My shuttle was diverted to assist in the rescue of VIPs. Could have been referring to them, but the diversion presumably came from Belcor and could have simply been a way to have me killed by the rebels while involved in rescue operations. We were attacked the moment we came within range.
They had your ship ident,
Borkus said.
Yes, Morse agreed. Which means that if Vader and the Emperor got off the Perilous, they had their ident too.
Borkus looked up sharply.
Wait. That's it. What's it? The intercept.
I'm not following, Morse said. Borkus spoke rapidly.
During the attack on the hub, we intercepted a communication to the shuttle on an open channel. Took us a while to decrypt it, and we still only got a partial. But it mentioned Vader.
I assumed it was code or nonsense or... Morse was half out of her seat.
Mentioned him how?
Borkus rose and started pacing, his eyes on the floor.
Coordinates, ma'am. If Vader and the Emperor escaped in a ship and it went down, then the rebels know where they landed. Or crashed.
Morse was standing now, too.
But so do we. What do we have here, Borkus? In terms of combat-capable crew, vehicles... I saw the stormtroopers. Anyone else? I need to get those coordinates.
Borkus was nodding, warming to Morse's still unspoken idea.
We have maintenance vehicles and transports, nothing armed.
As for personnel, I've got mostly techs and a handful of untested officers.
All in, I've got the 20 stormtroopers and maybe 10 more bodies familiar enough with a blaster to serve. 11, counting me.
That'll have to do. Morse said, placing her fingertips on the tabletop.
But you're not coming, Steen.
Ma'am.
Major, you're going to get the communications net back up, and when you do, you're going to reach out to officers we can trust. Only the ones we know are incapable of treachery. And you're going to have them round up every stormtrooper on Ryloth and bring them all to me. We can't count on anyone else. Whatever is going on here, a coup, an assassination attempt, both, hinges on killing me, the Emperor, and Vader. I'm going to make sure none of that happens. And then,
I'm going to put an end to Belcor and the Free Ryloth movement. They think today is their finest hour. I intend to make it their last.
Steen shook his head, his face flushed.
Ma'am, I've got someone I can leave in charge here. I'd rather accompany you. I don't have to tell him anything. He can supervise the repairs as well as me.
Mors looked Steen in the face, saw the desire there to do something, anything, and understood it quite well.
Very well, Steen. You're with me. One of your transports and my shuttle can carry the troops. Let's get everyone armed as quickly as possible and then move out.
Yes, ma'am,
Borkus said and saluted.
Chapter 13.
Isval considered skipping the planned rendezvous with Cham and heading directly to the coordinates she'd received from Nordon, but with communications down, Cham wouldn't know how to find her. He didn't have those coordinates yet. Phelan must have picked up on her tension.
You all right?
She asked.
Fine, Isval said, shifting in her seat. Just twitchy to get after Vader. We'll be at the rendezvous point shortly,
Phelan said, checking the coordinates. Below and before them, one of Ryloth's lush equatorial forests darkened the landscape. Most of the planet was dry and devoid of thick vegetation, but wind patterns and other meteorological phenomena that Isval didn't understand drew moisture to the equatorial region, giving Ryloth a belt of verdure. She rarely saw it up close, and now she couldn't stop staring down at the carpet of the forest's canopy. The last of the day's sunlight shaded it all in red.
Keep an active scan, she said to Phelan. Cham's never late.
Right on time, the scanner pinged a contact. Isval checked the details and saw it was Cham's transport. They'd need to be closer before she could hail him. Callan's jamming signal was doing its work well. She found she was leaning forward in her seat, trying to spy Cham's ship. Movement in the distance caught her eye. The ship. At visual distance, their transmitters would cut through Callan's jamming.
Cham, do you copy?
Isval,
he returned, and she heard the relief in his voice.
Put down in that clearing there. You see it?
Let's not waste the time, Cham. Nordon contacted me when we were attacking the communications hub. He had eyes on a downed Imperial shuttle. I have the coordinates. She transmitted them to Cham's ship.
Good,
Cham said.
But I still want you to set down. I've got 30 of our people aboard, Gaul and his troops. I want half of them on your ship.
Gaul and his fighters were one of the strike teams the movement used when they needed to hit something and hit it hard. Pock's team had been the same way until Pock had run into Vader.
Good thought,
she told him. No reason to put all their assets on one ship. To Phelan, she said,
you want to put us down?
Phelan smiled and shook her head. I've flown enough for today. Isval set the escort boat down in a wide clearing, and Cham landed his converted transport. Isval opened the passenger compartment door on the escort and debarked. The passenger bay door on Cham's ship opened, and Gaul and half his troops jogged out toward Isval's ship, all of them heavily laden with blasters and grenades. The men and women nodded at Isval as they passed, all but Gaul, who stopped before her. He stood taller than any other Twi'lek she had ever met. Muscles bulged under his deep green skin.
It's good to see you, Isval. That was good work today.
Good to see you too, Gaul. And the day is not done yet. Get your people aboard.
We're leaving in 5 minutes.
Got it, he said and moved past her. Seated and strapped in, ladies and gentlemen, he said to his team. We're going right back up.
Gaul, Isval called, and the big Twi'lek turned.
Crossed Drim and Eshko are aboard. They, need to come off.
Gaul's features fell, and he nodded. He looked around the clearing.
This is good soil. We'll handle it, Isval.
While Gaul pulled a few of his troops onto burial duty, Cham emerged from his ship, still wearing his headset, and the sight of him stalled her. He saw her and stopped too, just for a moment, then covered the distance between them rapidly. For a moment, Isval thought he might try to embrace her, and she didn't know how she felt about the warm rush the thought elicited. But he merely took her by the shoulders and looked into her eyes, both of them saying nothing yet, with their quiet saying much. As ever, they walked up to the line, but neither crossed. They couldn't do what they had to do for the movement if their relationship were anything more than it was. Just another casualty of the conflict, Isval supposed. It's good to see you, he said, and his skin darkened. She felt her skin darken in response. And you, Cham?
For a while I wasn't sure I would, he said.
And the thought didn't please me. I'm hard to get rid of, she said awkwardly. He smiled, but she saw the openness of his expression disappear as he closed down his emotions. She took the cue and did the same, leaving everything unspoken.
A Star Destroyer and an Imperial base in the span of hours, he commented. That has to be some kind of record. And damn good work.
His praise always pleased her. We're not done yet, though. Now we get Vader and the Emperor.
Now we get them,
Cham agreed.
Engines are still hot. Let's get moving.
He looked past her at Gaul and his troops, rapidly digging graves. Pain animated his eyes.
Peaceful sleep, my friends.
When they'd interred their fallen, they boarded their respective ships and lifted off, flying low over the trees. Cham's transport ran ahead, with Isfal's escort boat behind and slightly to starboard. They ran dark, no lights. Run every scan this boat has, Isval said to Phelan, and keep your eyes sharp.
Too dark to see anything, Phelan answered.
Eyes sharp anyway, Isval snapped.
Foliage is thick,
Cham said over the comlink.
It's interfering with scans.
A lot of life down there, Phelan said, checking on the infrared.
Clearings broke up the dense vegetation as they closed in the coordinates.
Got something. Metal. Large, Phelan said and looked over at Isval. Wreckage.
You getting that, Cham? Isval asked.
I got it. These aren't the coordinates we were given, but they're not too far out of the way. And there's no sign of Nordon.
No, Isval said, and both of them knew what Cham meant.
Nordon had run into Vader.
We should check it out,
Cham said.
Agreed, she said.
Forest is too thick to tell anything from the air. We'll have to set down and go in on foot. I'll find somewhere to set down.
Phelan located a clearing on the scan, and Isval set the boat down. She kept the engines hot. She hailed Cham as he set down his transport near the escort boat.
We should send the ships ahead to Nordon's coordinates, she suggested, just in case.
Was thinking the same thing,
he answered.
They can stagger the ships so we have a relay. Keep communication open between us.
Right, Isval said.
Phelan would fly halfway to the coordinates Nordon had given them and hover there. Callan would fly Cham's transport to the coordinates. He'd be close enough to have communications with Phelan, and she'd be close enough to have communications back to Cham and Isval.
You get any sign of Nordon, you let us know right away, Isval told Phelan. And don't worry about flying. The sim squared you away. You'll be fine.
Right and right, Phelan answered weakly. Isval debarked with Gaul and the members of his team who had joined him on her ship, met Cham in the clearing, and headed out in the direction of the wreckage, 4 kilometers into the forest. The wind had picked up and now howled through the trees, causing a continuous rustle. The humid air smelled of loam and conifers.
Howls, screeches, and growls rose above the sound of the wind to punctuate the darkness.
Cham and Isval led, and Gaul dispatched his crew into their